The early 2000s, what a fun time. Some of you may not have been born yet. It was a heyday of mine. All my friends from college were living in New York. We all would congregate at a place called Don Hills. Oh, man, on Spring and Greenwich in New York City. So much fun dancing. We would just dance. We were sweaty messes. And it's where I was introduced to a lot of music that I had never heard. Bands like Pulp and James and Pulp. I know Christian wants to make fun of me for that.
Pulp.
Pulp. Yeah, Common People. I love that song. I think that's the first time I heard it was there. And, there were a lot of NYU students. But then you'd see, like, there'd be some fancy people there. Kirsten Dunst used to go there, dance all the time with her friends.
Were you intrigued by her?
I certainly was. But I couldn't get really close because there was a wall of her girlfriends dancing around her. And Zoe Saldana and I, not to name drop, but we used to dance together all the
time.
Too late. Though. I know. But back then, it wasn't name dropping. It was just Zoe from Don Hills. And we had so much fun dancing and living it up, being young and carefree. And I remember one of those songs that I was introduced to. God, was it good. California, California. Christian's grim and wincing.
Oh, I just got shivers.
I loved it, though. It was Phantom Planet. I was like, what is this song? And everyone went nuts, and they started dancing, and it was really anthemic. But when I think of that song, I think of that place and that time in my life, which was really one I'll cherish forever. And now you all know about it.
So
was it gross the way I sang that?
Not gross, just
off-key.
Embarrassing.
Embarrassing, yeah.
It was embarrassing what you were doing with your head. Because I could tell you were a little embarrassed to do it.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
You're listening to Life is Short. I'm your nostalgic and slightly embarrassed host, Justin Long.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
With me, as always, he's popping his head. I'm just doing it.
California.
California. Well, it's a kind of obnoxious song to sing poorly. You know, it's a really obnoxious song. California. Mm-hmm. And now that song is so familiar to so many people because it was later used as the theme song for a hit show called The O.C. or The O.C., if you were our parents.
Yes.
That's how they'd pronounce it.
Stands for Orange County.
Oh, yes. And it was a hit show created by Josh Schwartz, I believe. Yes.
I don't know.
Oh, I think it was.
All I know is a hit show.
Yeah. Am I thinking Gossip Girl? It was Josh Schwartz. One of them was Josh Schwartz. He's a hit maker of some sort. And that song was written by Phantom Planet. Alex Greenwald, I think, was the singer. And a wonderful actor, a friend of ours, hopefully future friend of the show.
Jason Schwartzman.
Yeah.
Was the drummer.
He was the drummer. That's right. And man, Josh Schwartzman's a great musician. He had that other song I loved. Coconut Records was a great album.
He's a Renaissance man.
Why are we talking about The O.C.?
And, or The O.C.?
Or The O.C. And a time in your life where like the world was your oyster and everything was right at your feet.
I'll tell you why.
Why?
Because our guest today was one of the stars of the show.
California.
You're a little bit like, who's the Muppet?
Janine. Yes, Janine. Oh, like far out.
You sing a little like Janine. You look a little bit like her.
Okay. Well, thank you, California.
Our guest today is Adam Brody.
Yes, Adam, the delightful. Isn't he delightful? He's just a puckish, smart, fun guy to talk to.
I've never met him. But
nor have you heard him yet.
No, I haven't.
And you guys haven't heard. I'm sure many of you are familiar with him, as we said. How many times are we going to say it? He's the star of The O.C. But he's done many movies since then. He was in Grind with our friend Joey Kern. And he was in a movie with me called Yoga Hosers that maybe six of you have seen.
Right now, he's in a movie called Promising Young Woman, which is a fantastic movie. I just saw it on a plane a few weeks ago.
You shouldn't have seen that on a plane. I mean, well, I'm glad you saw it. I saw Tenet on a plane.
It was so good.
Yeah.
Promising Young Woman.
God, is it great. With
hopefully future guest.
Yeah.
Carey Mulligan.
Friend and hopefully friend of the show, Carey Mulligan.
Adam Brody is great in it. It's a great, a lot of ensemble. A lot of men are in it. You could have been in it,
well,
I suppose.
Yes, well, you don't have to rub it in. Yeah.
But you weren't.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Emerald Fennell. What a great name. A hell of a director. This movie's so good. You got to see it. But I love the way they use Adam in the movie, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
It kind of plays against his, I would guess, nice guy persona. We talk about it.
He also stars and produced a movie which got excellent reviews. I've not seen it yet, called The Kid Detective.
I think it's just Kid Detective.
It's the kid detective.
It is. I'm sorry. God.
It's all right.
I still can't get over how adamant I was about Jessica Rabbit and her feet. Still thinking about that from a couple of weeks ago.
You're usually not that convicted about things.
That's why.
And now you end up being wrong about it. Usually when you're that convicted about something, you're right.
Well, now I'll be even less convicted about something that I'll...
Well, that's good. It's not good to be a know-it-all.
I know.
It's not good to be that sure of yourself. A memory of a movie you haven't seen in 20 years.
I just wonder what
you should never be that sure of yourself.
That's true. I know that was strange that I really stuck to my guns on that. Anyway, speaking of sticking to your guns, Adam was also in Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Oh,
how about that?
That's a pretty good segue.
Those two stuck to their guns in that movie. Is it fair to say?
And thank you for smoking.
Uh huh. Oh, I thought you were saying that to me.
He's been in a lot.
A lot of stuff. A lot of great work. Adam is a very natural actor. He's very off the cuff. We talk about it with some of that dialogue he had in the OC was kind of dense, some of that TV writing.
It was a little bit like Dawson's Creek.
Yes, yeah. It was. It certainly was.
It was came out a couple of years after that, right? Maybe 3 years?
Yeah. And it was a time, again, we talk about, but just for some context for our younger listeners, it was a time where there were a ton of teen shows. There was a teen boom in Hollywood, and that's how I got my start, and a lot of other young actors. It was a good time to be a young actor, and Adam was one of those guys that came out of that time, and he's continuing to thrive. He's got a new family with another wonderful young actor, Leighton Meester.
Hopefully a future guest.
Yes, a friend, another friend who is yet to be a friend of the show. It's a theme so far in this introduction, but let's get into it.
Yes, please.
Here we go. This is Adam Brody.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do, 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 shaboom.
For all the shorties that want voluminous, fanned-out lashes, This ad is for you. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara creates corner-to-corner panoramic lash volume. Their tapered brush catches every single lash, even those pesky corner lashes. You know who you are, corner lashes. With the Panorama Mascara, you'll easily achieve that effortless, false lashes look. It's one of Christian's favorite looks. Plus, it lasts up to 24 hours and is clump and flake resistant. And just when you thought it couldn't get better, it does. The Panorama Mascara is a lot more affordable than other luxe mascaras. And honestly, it probably does a better job. It's affordable, but it's deceptive because it comes in a premium gold luxe packaging. So if you want a mascara that can do it all, volumize, lengthen, and stay put all day, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. As a podcast listener, I'm sure you know that audio piques the imagination, like especially this show. So if you really want to feel like you're in the story, check out Audible's collection of brand new exclusive thrillers.
Their titles feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. So you'll be kept on the edge of your seat.
Here's an interesting psychological thriller that is out right now. It's an Audible original. It's called Oracle. It follows an FBI psychic who can help solve missing person cases when he touches those close to the victims. But of course, it comes at a cost. He'll see the horrific moments before the victims disappeared.
Shorties, I just got chills. You have to listen along with me. You don't have to.
No.
But I think you should.
Yeah, it'd be fun. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/long or text long to 500-500. That's audible.com/long or text long to 500-500.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and up and we'll meet again.
No, you're not allowed to be early.
I'm always early.
Are you really?
Yeah, compulsively. No, that's how I do it.
Well, does it automatic? Is it a power move?
It's absolutely not. It's not at all. I don't know. It's like, well, I'm going to be on time. I'm good at that.
Wow.
And if I'm going to be on time, it's hard to get there at the exact minute of liftoff. Fuck it. I may as well be 5 minutes early everywhere I go and read a book or whatever.
That's so admirable, Adam. I wish I...
Leighton's the opposite.
Oh, really? Well, it's in her name, but it makes sense. She's an actress, so the truth is we have jobs that we can't really be that late for. I mean, some people.
Yeah, no, I mean, she's a high functioning adult, you know, like it. So, and in many ways more so than me, you know, I mean, she's more self-reliant, I think, than I am. So.
You guys had very different background. I mean, very different upbringings. Yeah.
Mine's like pretty meat and potatoes and hers is insane.
Yeah. What's the opposite of meat and potatoes if it's in food wise? Is it like.
I guess like fusion, some kind of crazy fusion.
But fusion that doesn't go together. Like,
No. A failed fusion.
Kosher sushi or something. I don't know. But yours was San Diego. I always assumed, I didn't know that until I did some research, or my brother did some research.
A deep dive.
A deep dive. And do people usually assume that you are that from an area like that?
It makes sense to me now. Uh-huh. Depends what season of life I'm in, I guess. But there was a moment there where people then started to assume, grew up and I was very much a surfer. Uh-huh. And even though, you know, my parents are Jewish, I'm Jewish, although nobody's religious. I didn't know any other Jewish people. I didn't have any kinship with it.
Did they raise you with the religion at all?
They never said the word God, like ever. Uh-huh. But they made me go to Hebrew school, which I was so pissed about. You know, I just found to be like beyond tedious. On Sunday, I got to go downtown instead of doing whatever my friends are doing. And then, you know, and then get made fun of for it, like a lot.
Really?
Yeah, not in a way that ever bothered me. It really didn't. Uh-huh. And I think it was good natured enough, even though the shit that was said was pretty mean. It was from my friends who did like me. So it was you know, an otherness, a ribbing.
It was affectionate anti-Semitism.
Just exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was.
Were there not a lot of Jewish kids in San Diego?
Not in my suburb, you know, and not in my school. I knew like two. And then I was surfing and not surfing either. Not at the beach, which I didn't grow up at the beach. So that was another click. And then I moved to LA and I kind of was like, fuck it. I don't want to be a surfer. This is like more or less my 20th birthday. I decided to, you know, track and I was 19. And,
So you didn't do plays or anything?
No.
Wow.
And then I was like, oh, I want to be an actor. And I'm a little embarrassed of this like dudeness. And I'm uninterested right now. Now there's a whole new world opening up. I wasn't even like reading books in high school. I was a bad student, not, you know, just because I wasn't inspired.
So what was it about acting why did you decide to try it?
A little bit part directionless and aimlessness. And then also I did, you know, I can look back and realize like, oh, I had an interest for a long time, even though I never pursued it. Like it always spoke to me a little bit randomly. I was, you know, when I graduated high school, I moved out. I was working at Blockbuster Video. So I was sort of absorbing a lot of movies then. I didn't work for a long time there, but like a year.
For our younger listeners, that was a, that was an establishment where they rented and sold. Isn't that crazy? I mean, how obsolete that sounds now, how archaic.
It's so bananas.
I love Blockbuster. Which you worked at one in LA?
San Diego.
Oh, at the San Diego one. Yeah. So you loved movies. You like being around movies and stuff.
Yeah. And I was getting particularly into it then. I mean, who doesn't, first of all? I mean, it's like everyone likes a movie. But I just, I got into it a little more then, and then coincidentally, my roommate had a friend who was also like an ex-surfer who moved to LA with his mom and started acting and dabbling, and we're like, let's go up for 48 hours and see what that's like and what his life is like, and then we were into it, and we're like, let's come back in a month and just move up here and just see, and I moved up on a whim to just try and throw myself headfirst into acting and see what happened. And I would have turned back pretty quickly if I didn't get any traction, but fortunately I did.
Really? I was going to say, how long do you think you would have given it?
I mean, it's tough to say because it's a sliding scale of, you know, as long as I saw progress, you know, I don't know, you know, in that level of what my floor of what I would require as progress or success had gone up every year, but
yeah, well, how quickly did it then happen?
Remarkably fast. I mean, it felt long at the time. It still sounds crazy to me now. I moved up on basically my 19th birthday. I had no SAG card, no experience, never taken an acting class, nothing, and no real connections either.
Wow.
I spent my 20th birthday, celebrated it, on the Paramount lot as the lead of like a behind-the-scenes Brady Bunch TV movie.
Oh my God.
It was cool. It was unbelievable. I was driving through the Paramount gates like every day for a month as the lead of this movie.
I remember that feeling that specifically at Paramount, because it felt so like what you think of as Hollywood. You know, it felt like it was almost like cliche. It was like, oh, the alien extras smoking cigarettes.
You park in the lot where it's like the big wall that's painted like the sky.
Yep.
Like, you know, Truman Show at Edge of the Truman Show or something. It wasn't like that changed everything. I mean, what it did allow me to do, I had a string of part-time jobs that year, and then I never had to have another part-time job after that. I was just an actor. It didn't like really change anything for me. And then I was unemployed again for the next 3-4 months, and I didn't know anyone, and it was still like a lonely existence for a handful of years. But it did feel like, and the other thing that was so cool was like, randomly, I don't know why, but they also had like a premiere for it at a movie theater. So like 4 months, 6 months after that, I invited my parents up, who were like skeptical of me going to be an actor, rightly so, because I had never done it. Like a year and a half later, I'm like, come to my movie premiere.
and it's commonly known that Jews never succeed in Hollywood.
That's exactly right. And that's why I had to fight a lot of stigma. Right.
Adam, it also must have been like, I know that feeling too, which is like, they have this fear about you doing this thing that is very tenuous, and like, now they see you at a premiere. So it's like, it validates this crazy thing that you're doing. That must have felt really good too.
It felt great. And it's not that they were ever like, they were always hopeful and very supportive, but you know, they changed my dad particularly right away. It was funny. It was like, we had such a contentious high school relationship and junior high, and like vanished over, you know what I mean? It was like, all right, you're off, your, you got it. You never mind. What do I know? You figured it out.
Oh my God.
Like, we've been good ever since.
And so out of that, the root of that contentiousness was that you were kind of wayward and directionless. He wanted you to be more stable, like more.
Yeah, solid. I mean, the root of it was almost as simply as like, my grades weren't good enough.
Uh-huh.
Why can't you just get fucking decent grades? You know? And I'm like, I don't know. I just don't think I can. Did you go to college? I didn't go to college.
I did for two That's years, nice. And then I dropped out to try this. But yeah, because I was gonna say, like, we also were very lucky in that I think we're like similar age and similar backgrounds.
I'm 41.
I'm 64.
Oh,
I'm 42. Yeah. But that time, I remember, like, there were, you know, it was just a great time to be actors our age and to like.
Well, I was going to ask you. I only have a guess, but I don't have a sense of it because I'm not watching the high school college stuff now.
Yeah.
But still. It feels like that was a golden era for, you know, high school content. And of course, being a young white man didn't hurt
then
either. But yeah, it just felt like I was moving up there in the era, up here in the era of American Pie and Freddie Prinze Jr. And, you know.
It was all that. It was that time. I don't think you're wrong at all. I think anyone would say that, except maybe young people now. Would say no. This is the best time for
Yeah.
I know it was that era, and there were so many, and we both benefited from that, and certainly when you got the OC or even before that, Gilmore Girls. There was an arc on the Gilmore Girls that kind of led to the OC, right?
I don't think they directly related to each other, but I did go from that to the other, and I felt like even at the time with the OC, like. You know, I was 23 and I did feel like a veteran. You know, I really did by that time. You know, I was actually quite, I don't think I was cocky. I was just confident and I knew the kind of lay of the land. And I felt like I kind of knew my ability and
I wondered that you've always had a very natural, you always seemed very natural with dialogue that sometimes felt like it might trip other actors up, if that makes sense.
I think that's probably my strongest skill set. You know, I mean, I think like going deep, digging deep, getting real into character, brooding, that has never been my strong suit. But if you got a speech, like I can wrap my, and the language is tricky, I can probably figure that out.
Did you ever deal with nerves? Did you ever read something and think, I'm not going to be able to ground this. This is, I can't say this. Were you nervous as when you started out?
I mean, I'll, of course, still nervous, you know, I mean, I'll always, I sometimes before I go do something now, I'm like, I can't believe I do this. I can't believe I'm able to do this. And I don't know how I'm going to do this. And what a wild job. But I remember just going back to that Brady Bunch movie for a minute, like being, feeling like you get older and you learn how to face out to camera and you learn how to, but I had so much trouble in that first job. I was still, the whole thing was like, fuck a choice. It was about like, how do I even be natural? How can I even sound like human is so much of it. And then all the, you know, if you're making something funny, that's fun. And that actually did come natural and was fun, but it was like a fear of not being able to make stuff sound natural. And so anytime, that was my first real, you know, I'd been on TV for like a total of 2 minutes previous to that. And I was so defensive of like, you know, they'd be like, can you cheat here? Can you do hit this mark? Or can you face out here? And I'm like, no, I can't. Cause like, it's not natural. And
it's
I
don't know how to, oh.
I felt so limited in my ability to even make it natural at all that I couldn't possibly also hit an unnatural mark and face out in an unnatural way.
I know what you mean. I know. I always used to really admire those actors. I worked with one on a TV show, this guy, Tom, he was so good about the props, drinking on a certain line, putting it down without interrupting a line. He did everything. And I remember at the time thinking, oh, that's mechanical. That's not natural. That's not, but he had the skill set to be able to remember all those things, the mechanical elements of the editing and know when they were going to cut and still be natural. And at the time I just thought, well, he's not in it. He's not like,
you should
just do whatever, you know, because I had the same fear. Yeah, that's what it is. It's a fear of being unnatural. When you got the OC, did that elevate your comfort level to a place where you'd go to work and you were excited?
Honestly, the OC, I was pretty confident by then. I had done this show. It was a very derivative of American Pie. Huh. But we did it in Vancouver, and I was one of the four leads. And I felt like...
Wait, what was it called?
It's called The Sausage Factory, maybe. and then it was called Now What, when it ultimately played down here.
Oh, funny.
And this was in like 2001.
The Sausage Factory.
The Sausage Factory. Henry Pincus says The Sausage Factory. And anyways, it was a blast. And I felt like I got so much experience from that, you know, doing like a Jason Biggs type thing for 13 episodes.
I bet.
I felt like a veteran of like the teen comedy by then anyways. Yeah. And, you know, it depended. Honestly, if it was lighter and comedic, I felt very good and very confident. Mm-hmm. Like the OC, I felt really good. Gilmore Girls, I felt really good. I wasn't nervous at all. And then if it was dramatic, I felt much more out of my depth. You know, I did like horrible guest stars on, you know, procedural stuff. I mean, you know, that stuff really.
What, were you have to say like police jargon or like medical stuff?
No, where I was like, there's like a Judging Amy episode I did. This is before these other jobs. And like,
you're like a delinquent?
I'm a goth kid. Uh-huh. So I got like goth and I'm on trial because my girlfriend and I wanted to kill ourselves. And we did, but I chickened out at the last moment and she died.
Oh, it's like, fuck, it's like melodramatic stuff.
It's melodramatic, like, while I look like The Cure, you know, Robert Smith, The Cure.
Yeah.
And I'm having a breakdown on the stand.
Oh, man. Yeah.
It's not good.
Have you seen it in a while?
Oh, my God. Not in like 10 years and certainly not the whole thing in 20. But
yeah,
I think I've seen like a clip of it and I can't bear to watch. Also, I can't bear to watch that. That said, despite any confidence I had, I also can't bear to watch any of the OC or.
Oh, really?
Can I speculate on something that I'm 90% sure is right for you and is 100% sure right for me?
Uh-huh.
The first half of my 20s, when I moved up to LA, and so this is pretty much for most of the OC, certainly Gilmore Girls, certainly any of the stuff I did, like Vince Vaughn was my acting hero.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah.
and to the point where I'm doing a terrible imitation of him.
Oh my God. It's so funny.
For
yeah.
most of my 20s.
Yeah.
And I've since knocked that off.
Yeah.
That was, you know, a lot of my acting for better and worse in my 20s is due to him.
Adam, I don't even think that's shameful. Maybe I'm just saying that because I'm so guilty of it. But I think I also see other, and I wonder if you do, other very clear influences. Like I see a lot of like guys that I looked up to, like Sam Rockwell and Michael J. Fox is there. And Who are some of those other? Do you ever pinpoint like, oh, that's from, even if it's like a friend that I thought was cool.
Yeah. These are going to sound weird, but I mm-hmm. have, and it won't trans, it'll be silly sounding like I've done them, but I still can have mm-hmm. a picture in my head and I can filter it through me and I swear I get something from it. But like, I've pulled from like Harrison Ford and Tom Cruise a couple times, just a line here and there.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise has a great focused intensity.
Yes.
And Harrison Ford has a great, I'm pissed off at everyone. Like,
yeah, there was a man in my house. Yeah.
But just even like pissed off at, I mean, it's sort of archaic now, but like mad at women for nothing. You know what I mean? Like, when like, when it was cool to have like be mad at your leading lady for, you know.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. To overreact at, I'm thinking of Raiders of the Lost Ark now, like with Karen Allen.
Jack Nicholson. Is in my head, but I can't say like I ever do a line. I never do like a line reading of his stuff, but I look to him a little bit. And then also, again, I never really have done a line read. I've never felt to me like I'm consciously pulling like a Nicolas Cage, but I look to him too. What I like about him and Jack Nicholson a little bit, but Nicolas Cage is, he's pretty theatrical, you know?
Yeah.
He's pretty like, he first of all, he's just so brilliantly funny. But yeah. Also can go so deep and it can be so real, but
can be so big and still so
big.
Real.
He's yeah. so big and he has fun with that. And I listen yeah. to that like GQ, he explains his roles and I just love it.
Yeah.
And he's just talking about like, he's not worried about being natural and he's pulling from other things that are more theatrical, like paintings and shit.
Yes.
And like, and totally. old performances of like silent movie stuff. And I just think that's so neat.
Yeah, well, that's why I've also always loved Michael Richards.
Kramer?
Kramer, yeah. I sometimes I just marvel at what he does because it is so, it's like cartoonishly big, but it is so, it's all real. Mm-hmm. It's amazing that human behavior can be that big because you never see that. You rarely see that in life, but it's like he makes it all real. I feel that way about Nicolas Cage too.
I did like a handful of episodes of The League, and Jeff and Jackie Schaefer, who ran that, also run, or Jeff at least does, Curb Your Enthusiasm. And I learned pretty quickly on that, like, oh, it's just much better if I yell everything. Like sometimes subtlety works, and I've gotten more subtle as I've gotten older, and I've learned more the power of stillness, and I do less as I get older, and it seems to work. And I'll tell you who else I've pulled from with no one would ever think or you never connected, but like Brad Pitt is an influence too, and he can do fucking nothing and does a lot with his hands. Nothing, and he's got cool hands and it does a lot, but the guy just chews food and whispers and like talks with a karate chop, and it's like
that's true he punctuates everything with his true. When you look at the OC, you mentioned like you have a hard time like watching that stuff. Is, do you ever, because I do this, fixate on your hands? I think oftentimes like gestures are a real tell if somebody's not, comfortable or being truthful. You can see it in there. I see it when I watch reality shows and guys who are uncomfortable, and it comes out in their hands. Do you ever?
Not, you know, when I think back on like performances of mine, I can't, the body language doesn't come to mind so much. It's the voice and the speed. And you know, the OC is me like doing a chipmunk Vince Vaughn. I still feel like I'm going through, even though I'm mid-20s, like it sounds like I'm going through puberty still.
I know, me too. I know. I think it sounds like I'm forcing my voice up when I watch old stuff, but I, I think our voices have probably hopefully just naturally dropped. We've gone through puberty, I think. Almost.
A late puberty, and I think it was that speed and that high Vince Vaughn-isms or velocity, and it just, I don't know. I just watch it now and I'm like, settle down.
I know. I know a lot of people who were on shows that were massive, like the OC, like those teen shows that were so big. Can you talk about that? Like how quickly that changed for you? Because it was such a massive show, so popular among younger people that I can only imagine what that must be like. I've never really experienced that degree of fame.
Honestly, like, we were in such a bubble. It was pre-social media. So
that's true.
We were filming down in Manhattan Beach. It wasn't like I had 20 million Twitter followers or whatever. And I'm like, I was like dating my co-star. Everyone was dating someone that knew what we were, just in like a 30 person, you know, social bubble that it felt like another planet too.
Yeah.
At the time. And it was, you know, we're kind of the only ones on that studio. Felt more like office buildings or something.
Is that where they shot CSI Miami?
I don't know about that, but it's where they shot Ally McBeal in Boston Public. I know.
Oh, okay. All right.
I just didn't feel, yes, we got more famous, but I was living in Hollywood. I wasn't around that many places. I mean, and even the opportunities, like, I felt like at once, oh my God, I have all these opportunities all of a sudden, and I'm seeing movies and I'm getting cool meetings. But we filmed that show like nine and a half months a year. It wasn't much time to like capitalize on it, really. Mm.
Have you talked to, because I know Leighton was on a similarly popular show. Did you guys have similar experiences, or was hers more,
I think more public? Hers was more official. Hers was way more public. They were filming, I think it was, first of all, it was, you know, later, so there's more social media, there's more, even more paparazzi, there's more, and then also they're filming on the streets of New York, which is just,
oh yeah, of course.
You know, and yeah, so I mean, while we were filming off on our own, they were on the street. It was like a thing, it seemed like, you know, TRL or something, like it, where just, you know, I mean, that's one of her complaints, is like there'd just be like fans and paparazzi in your eye line, and they wouldn't even do enough seemingly to get him out of there. In fact, maybe even kind of courted it. I don't know. But like, it was a real scene. And I know that that sounded hard. And then also just the fast paced life of also being in your very early 20s, famous on a show in New York. Living
oh my
York.
God. Yeah. Who hasn't been there? You're standing in the wine aisle, staring at the shelves.
Even if I go in with a plan, I find myself getting overwhelmed by the options.
That's why I don't like those stores. I also don't like wine, really. But I do now. I do now. I started drinking wine.
Why?
Well, a couple of
reasons. What changed your mind, Austin?
Well, I'm 43 now. You know, it's time. I'm an adult. And I discovered First Leaf. First Leaf it's a much better way to discover wine at a fraction of the price you'll find in a store, one of those confusing wine stores.
So First Leaf we should tell people what it is.
I guess.
It's a fully customizable wine club that sends curated boxes of wine.
Who doesn't like being
straight
at a club?
To your house.
Even if you don't like wine, clubs are fun.
Do you know, I've been part of the club for a few months now. They generously offered us both to try the club, and I liked it so much, I remained a member.
You did.
So now I'm up to 3 months in now.
Oh,
and
they got you.
It's so exciting. Every month they send you a box of wine that they curated
for
you.
It is exciting to get those things. Because I have kind of a bad memory. So like it's such a surprise for me. What's this box? Somebody sent me a bunch of wine.
So save time, money, and stress with First Leaf.
It's the wine club designed with you in mind. Join today and you'll get 6 bottles of wine for just $29.95 and free shipping.
Just go to tryfirstleaf.com/long. That's 6 bottles of wine for $29.95 and free shipping at tryfirstleaf.com/long.
Life is Short is generously supported by The Zebra. Now, how many times have you ordered something silly online, Christian?
I'm
pretty prudent.
I'm pretty prudent, but I've definitely ordered things that I didn't necessarily need.
But then there's, you know, those big purchases like insurance. Insurance is a thing that you don't get to see. It's not tangible right away, so it's like kind of annoying to buy. And I don't know if you knew this, but Americans overspend on car and home insurance by billions each year. Billions. And that doesn't have to be you. You can avoid that.
How?
The Zebra. The Zebra is the nation's leading insurance comparison site for car and home insurance. And in just minutes, you can so easily compare policies from every major provider for free. And here's the key. It's all on one independent marketplace.
So they ask you a few questions. Very simple. The Zebra then pairs people with the right insurance company for their specific needs. So you save time, you save money, and who doesn't want to save both time and money?
Oof, man, they're both pretty precious. And the best thing about it, the key actually, is that they have no stake in the policy you choose. They're just They're just there. They exist to find the coverage that's right for you. So they're not leading you in any direction.
That's right. So you can buy it online or over the phone with one of their licensed insurance agents. And there are no hidden fees or fine print about your personal information.
Make insurance your smartest purchase yet. Visit thezebra.com/long to get your free quote today. That's thezebra.com/long.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up we'll meet again.
So you said you were able to do other, barely able to do other things while you were doing the OC. Was Mr. and Mrs. Smith and Thank You for Smoking, which I know were two, those were two big movies for you. Did they happen during the OC or was
they
that
happened
after?
During, and those were like a few couple day shoots for me each one. Oh, okay. So it was easy. And Mr. Smith, I, Doug Liman directed and he directed the pilot of the OC, which is the reason I did that, which is, so back to Vince Vaughn. So loved Vince Vaughn, saw Swingers when I was in high school and it meant nothing to me. I didn't really get it. You know, I wasn't there yet and I wasn't an actor. And I was like, I don't know. I saw it and forgot it. I don't think I hated it, but I just didn't land for me. And then I moved to LA and then I was lonely living in a dump in Hollywood by myself and like, you know, just lonely and felt like this is, I don't know. And then discovered that movie. And then I'm like, not only is it like my favorite acting, but it's just glamorizing my life. And I want to be these people and watch it a million times. So then the OC, I was 23. So, and I was on Gilmore Girls. I was reluctant to dive into a high school show, mostly just because of the age of it all. I was like, the cool thing is to play your age. I'm sure you're very familiar with that.
Yeah. Oh, it took me a long time.
Yeah. And so I was hesitant and he wasn't on board first. So I kind of declined like reading for it, I think. And then he came on to direct, and I also loved Born Identity. He had directed Born Identity by then and Go, but it was really the Swingers of it all. You know, he was my favorite director. I was like, okay, I'll do it. You know, I'll go report, I'll do it. And then got the part, and then he asked me to do Mr. Smith. I was very excited to do that. And then Vince Vaughn was in that. And then Doug and I went to a screening. Like, Doug flew Vince and I to a screening in Orange County in his little prop plane, so.
Oh, that's cool. That. So you got to tell Vin, you got to hang with him a bit.
Yeah. I don't think I said any of this stuff, but I did
that. A strange silent kid in the corner. was Cop Out? I know we both have done.
It's Kevin Smith stuff. Yeah. I've done a lot of Kevin Smith stuff.
I mean, like, I think for life now, we kind of have to.
Yeah, that's right. You get the call every 2-3 years.
For better or for worse, I'll cut that out.
It's honestly like they're the most fun. So I get stoned. You give me a round of applause when I show up. I'll do whatever I want. You encourage it. You'll show me playback. We'll do like 2 takes. I'm out of there. And then you and I'll hang in your trailer for a little. Like,
I know. It's pretty great. And Cop Out was the first time you
were. Cop Out was the first time, save for like a quick get out the vote commercial a couple years before. And Cop Out was a blast. He had a nightmare on it. I had a blast.
That's right. Yeah. Right. All that Bruce stuff. You know, people come up to me. Somebody just did the other day and they were like, is working with Bruce. I he's just put that out there so many times that I don't. I used to hesitate to even mention it, but he. He had a tough time. He was smoking then? Because when did he start? I know he didn't used to.
Right.
And then once he started, he did it, as you know, all day. He really like hit the ground running.
Yeah. I think he was smoking then. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
How often do you, but you can't smoke before you do.
No, I don't. I mean, I probably could, but I wouldn't, you know, like, I'm curious to see what would happen. I'm sure some stuff would be interesting, but like, I would never, you know, I take that back. I've been a little stoned and something, and it was fine, but I in general don't.
I got too stoned in one thing. I'll tell you one. This is it's way too long a story, but next time I run into you, it's a fun story. But I will never again because of that experience.
I definitely would be. Yeah,
I don't know how he does it. But he does. But he's.
You know, I do. I feel like I could in a.
If you were directing
enough, you're not like. You're always stoned, but you're never like. Wasted. And so, you know, it's not like
his tolerance is
not, he's not getting like paranoid. And then also it's his set, it's his comfort. Everyone knows,
that's true.
You know, it's
true.
It's your environment. So I know that I can be creative and productive to an extent. I mean, I'll probably have to take a nap in a few hours, you know, but like for a few hours, I'm pretty inspired. But
do you write?
Not nearly as much as I'd like to, but I have a blast every 2 years when I'm in final draft writing something. It's like the most fun. But the rest is just like spitballing, and that's fun too, but I wish I was more prolific or driven.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe
well,
it's the plot.
Maybe I'm sensing a threat. But like we said, he's able to do both. He's figured out a way. And with kids, it must be that much harder to have those smoking times.
Certainly. But you can also get to a pretty child. You can do it anyway, but like you can get to a child, you can get on their level.
It might help. I was going to say,
you know, like there are times where I'm like, all right, you want to play dolls? Let's play dolls. Like I said, you might be able to dive deeper into dolls, but you also have to make sure not to burn the house down. And
That's right.
To balance.
You got to calibrate.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to make sure, you know, at least somebody is not stoned around to turn off the oven.
How have you guys been in quarantine with the kids? How is that?
Well, you know, we had another kid during this quarantine.
Oh, wow.
So
congratulations.
Thank you. So it's been mostly nice to be forced to kind of, okay, well.
Totally.
He's 7 months now. The last trimester of the pregnancy plus this, we've been home. Oh. Like it's been, that has been nice. You know, we've had less help because of it, had less distraction, had less play dates for our daughter. Yeah. So, you know, had less when my wife was, when Leighton was, you know, very uncomfortable in her last trimester, you know, she couldn't get any, like, you know, I'd give her a massage, but like couldn't get a massage, couldn't get any, like couldn't go to like, just couldn't really have any outside support mentally or physically.
And how old's your daughter now, Adam?
She's 5.
Oh, wow. My God.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I can tell already, like, they're going to be close. Like, they already really like each other. And and she's so sweet-natured that, he's going to be too, that I you know, kids are like, you meet a lot of kids as anyone does, but as a parent, and not all of them are nice. You know?
Right.
And kind. And you wonder.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, obviously, some of it's what is learned and what is not, and what is going to be a phase that you're grown out of, and who's going to be a dick for their whole life.
I know.
It's a very interesting question, and I have that. You know, I'm thinking of a few kids where I'm like, your parents are so nice, you're awful.
Yeah. Now, well, name them. Like who?
Would I parent differently? Yes. Would I try to nip some of this in the bud with some more consequences? Absolutely.
Right.
But still seems like some of this is their nature. And I wonder, are you always going to be a little backstabber, or are you going to grow out of this? And this is just is adolescence trying for you, but you will adjust.
I'm definitely out of my depth in talking about this, but I would imagine that isn't that kind of who you are? I mean, don't they say that? Don't they say you're formed
by
the time you're...
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, I know that, for instance, I have two brothers. They're younger. They're twins. They're very fraternal. They're fraternal. They don't look alike. They don't... And they're more different. I'm more like either of them than they are like each other. I'm like in the middle. Anyways, one of them, who's, I think, brilliant, he's got his own lab at University of Michigan now. He's a professor of, deals with like heart cells and mice and biochemistry. Anyways, biomedical research. Anyway,
he's so smart that you can't even describe.
I don't
really
know
what he does.
But it's also like my parents say he's a genius. I think so, but it's also a very learned language. So it's tough for me to say, like, I know he can speak that, but he's trained to do that. But at the same time, I think he's quite accomplished. Like I said, he's got his own. He's a professor at University of Michigan, so seems pretty good. Anyways, the broader point is he's lovely now and a sweet guy. And he was a miserable bastard growing up, and he was so unhappy. And he was always a good student, so he could turn it off at school. But he'd come home, and they hated each other. These kids growing up, it was just a war. And there's
how
a lot
far
of,
apart were you? I mean, what was
I'm
the age
5 years older, so I was just like, I'm not here. You know, I'm not.
Oh,
but,
like your kids, weird.
Yeah. But anyways, all to say, my brother at home, anyways, was a miserable son of a bitch. who grew up to be a lovely person. And he was just, I think he had a bit of a chemical imbalance. Maybe he's on the spectrum a little bit. I don't know. You know, all to say that I see some of these kids and I think, no, it might just be, you might grow out of this. But there are some kids, and I've seen some things where again, we love the parents. They're lovely. And I'm like, I can't hang out with you anymore. Or like, I've just seen kids like do mean shit. Like this one girl, like, you know, not even to my daughter, but they're all playing on the jungle gym. And she comes over and one girl's hand is like, she's climbing up something. And I see her just go and step on it slowly. Like, just crush this girl's hand. And, you know.
A little sinister.
Yes. Sadistic. And the one thing I'll say, what I love, one of the things I'm most proud of my daughter, and I'm sure my son's going to be the same way, is like, she doesn't have that. She doesn't have any interest in causing pain and get any pleasure out of that. And that's good.
It must be nice. It must be nice, but also must be, in a way, such a relief. Because I think about that sometimes. And I would love to have kids, but I think it is such a fear of mine that, like you said, you have one who just happens to be difficult and like and like not a good person. That would be really, that'd be really hard.
I really do think there are ways to parent. There are ways, we're more informed now than we were a generation ago. And there are ways to combat that and redirect that, I should say. And so I'm really curious, like, I think most, especially with nice parents, but shown the proper like channels to get their feelings out, will probably be sweet people.
That must be really hard to see somebody causing your kid pain.
Yeah, it's untenable, really. I mean, you just got to leave. You know, I've been at friends' houses. I'm like, I'm going to leave now because you're not doing anything. I don't say this, but it's like, you're not doing anything and your kid is only trying to make my kid upset. So when she plays with something, she's like, you can't play with that. Go, you know, or you go on the trampoline, I'm going to shove you. I'm like, I got to go. I don't know.
And so then do you have to do that passive aggressive thing where you're like talking to the kid? Now, don't do that. Some version of like, well, no, that's not yours. You have to share that. But like kind of also trying to communicate with the parent.
That's the difficult part. It's sort of, I don't want to say easy, but like I can talk to my kid, but it's like when you're parenting too a little bit or trying to dispute and you don't want to overstep. But you also want to like alleviate the situation and fix the situation. And that's when it gets a little tricky. And there's only so much you can say to some other kid that's not yours, you know, and try to explain to your kid without hurting the other kid or their parent, you know, by without throwing them under the bus, not your kid. But I don't know. It gets a little tricky. Yeah.
Quickly, I do want to talk about Promising Young Woman because it's so good. And your character was such a surprise. Was the handyman here?
No, I looked. Let me just peek. Give me.
Yes, yeah, me too. Oh, great.
Do you have to go to the restroom?
Yes, perfect.
I'm gonna peek. See you back in like 3 minutes.
Okay, perfect. Hey,
cool.
How is your pee?
Quick and to the point.
We can cut this out. But are you finding? I remember a couple of years ago, somebody said I was on the phone while I was peeing. I was on the phone with them, and they were like, oh, listen to that. He's this older Broadway guy. And he said, oh, wow. Wow, good for you. And I was like, what do you mean? And he goes, your stream is really powerful, wonderful. And I said, a stream's a stream. Doesn't it all come out the same? He was like, oh, God, no. You'll reach a point where it's like, you know, you don't pee as... This is about a year ago. And like, like I turned 42. And I was like, my pee, I'm like... Sometimes peeing 3 times a night, I probably have to go get my prostate checked. Listeners are gonna love this.
Yeah, let's keep going. No, I'd love to talk about this, and you don't have to cut this out. I also, not 3 times a night, but the difference in pee I've noticed for sure is just the night pee. Like almost more often than not, I need a night pee. And then also, and I think this has sort of always been the case, but I can't be sure. The stream's strong and good, but it doesn't matter how many times I shake. I could shake for 45 minutes.
There's
a little bit in my underwear.
Yes. What is that? Why didn't my dad tell me about that?
Why can't I just trick my dick?
I know. It's
in your underwear. It's gone. Look, you shake, 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 shake. There's no more.
Oh my God. You know, that is so, it's actually really, it's really nice to hear you say that.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I was like, Is this, I guess it happens. That's just what happens.
Yeah. And I can't say for sure it didn't happen before, but it's something I noticed.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. Okay. I guess I don't either.
Speaking of peeing a little bit when you think you're done, Promising Young Woman. Your part in it was so, I loved it because it was, and it's, I wonder if this is why you did it. It completely was a play against what you do so well. It was what you're kind of known to do is to play, you play like such a great, nice guy. You play a guy.
I know. Where were you in this movie?
I know. Right. I know. No, but it was a real, so the turn was it as simple as that? I want to do that turn or I want to work with Carrie.
Yeah, no, it was a really good script. So, you know, mm-hmm. It's like, I'll do whatever.
Yeah.
It was really good script and it's Carrie Mulligan and happy to be involved in any way you want me to. And I had a great meeting with Emerald Fennell, who's just lovely and charming.
Oh, what a great director. I love the movie. I also love her name, Emerald Fennell.
I know. Yeah. Yeah.
What a name.
And she's like really talented actor too.
She is. I know. That's you right. Know?
And we're getting to that point too, where like directors are becoming younger than us. And that's weird.
I know. I know they pee better.
They pee stronger, cleaner. So yeah, that's why. And I do think it's a wise use of myself and other actors in it as well, kind of subverting our personas. So it's wise. And it was fun because, you know that the audience is, the first stuff's easy. You pretend to be charming. You think you're charming. You know, he thinks he's charming the whole time. But where it really gets fun is making the audience squirm later, where she's more or less a corpse and he's, you know, being dashing to her and putting the moves on, and it gets gross.
And gross, and playing with that line. Normally it's like, you know, it's very clear. It's like, oh, this guy's a douchebag, or there's a very clear turn whereas this is, it's a lot more subtle, and it's disturbing how real it's all played, you know.
Honestly, one of the easier parts, quite honestly, and I'm sure you would recognize that too, because it's like, well, you start out, you're just a regular guy, you're charming, and then you don't have to, you know, so much of our jobs are like trying to make a character likable, even if they're not that likable on the page, or some of their dialogue or actions are questionable. You're like, how do I like make this palatable and make him a hero? To be able to be liberated from that and lean into everything that's awful about it, and at the same time not have the burden of I'm playing a super comedic douche and I got to come up with like very funny stuff to make, you know, this guy on the cell phone and such an asshole, you know, such an asswipe. It just is very natural, almost subtle stuff that's just awful and funny in the grounded context.
That's true. That makes sense. Yeah. I'm thinking now of some of the, which is why it's fun to do the Kevin Smith things, because you just get to, you don't have to worry about that. So you get to kind of play and do whatever.
You need to play. But with the Kevin Smith stuff, the difference is, I mean, that's what I'm thinking of. I've played like, you know, assholes and his stuff. And it's like, you got to, it's fun because it's freeing and it's fun, but you also have to come with your own jokes and like do it at like a 12 and like bring a lot of, you know, and this is like, you don't have, it's all on the page and you can be very subtle and take it easy. And I didn't have a lot of heavy lifting. It was pretty easy.
Is that what you're doing? Because I was like, is that what you're doing press now for that? You're doing
stuff?
No,
The Kid Detective. The Kid Detective is what I'm here for.
Oh. Oh, wait, okay. Well, let's talk about that. Oh, The Kid Detective. What is that? Well, tell me about that.
I'll tell you all about it. Well, it's okay. It's this passion project of mine that a super talented writer-director approached me with like 8 years ago. And we have been trying to get it made. I sort of never thought it would for a while. I tried to get it made for a while, and then I was like, not going to happen. And then lo and behold, it did. Filmed it, you know, end of 2019. And it is I just love it. It's sort of the most satisfying movie or really of my career, partly because I also produced it and I have a lot of, you know, I made a lot of creative decisions, not just acting in it, but also it was written for me. And more than that, I just love it. It's like, it's about a former kid detective prodigy, Encyclopedia Brown, Nancy Drew, what have you, who gets hung up on solving petty crimes in his town, and he's celebrated, and then when he's 12, his secretary, who's also his age, 13-year-old girl goes missing. It really fucks him up. He can't solve it. And 20 years later, he's the town drunk, and he's still solving like missing cat stuff. And then a high school girl asks him to solve her boyfriend's murder. And so he's got a big case, chance to prove himself. He's horribly unequipped. But while it is a silly and very commercial premise, and it has a bunch of comedy in it, it's way more grounded and psychological than you would think. My friend is such a talented writer. I mean, it just has what it really has is like a script full of quotable dialogue. It's the kind of script that like, he's not in Hollywood. Otherwise, like it's such a blacklist script to me, you know, it's a script that like should have won or been high on the blacklist.
Is your friend from school, from back?
No, he's Toronto based, and I met him at a film festival like 8 years ago, and he's become a good friend. But he doesn't really have many connections to the business. But anyways, it's a good, it's a really good movie. I'm really proud of it. Yeah.
Now I really want to see this. Where do people see it?
It got released in the true sense of the word.
Kind
of
like, dumped.
Yeah. Here it is. It's on the fucking internet. Didn't get buried, but it certainly got dumped.
And, yeah.
You know, that's okay because people are finding it and I'm promoting it. And like, not that anyone would see it in the height of the pandemic, abandoned theaters across America, but it did allow us to get reviewed from a lot of places, help build awareness for a digital release that then happened in late January.
I can't wait. Okay, Kid Detective, check it out. We will, and we'll post about it. That's the nice thing about social media, right, too? You can like, if there's been some deficiency in something that you care about wanting people to see, you can put it out there.
Yeah, no, it's been nice, and we have been, and I can even see more or less who sees it.
Oh, really?
You know?
Yeah, oh, really? That's true. Yeah. So if you don't see it, Adam will know.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do, 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 shaboom.
This segment is brought to you by Bud Light Seltzer's new Retro Summer Pack. Christian,
yes.
Where were you during the OJ chase?
I remember where I was when that happened.
Do you?
The white Ford Bronco.
Yeah, where were you?
I was sitting on my butt watching the NBA Finals. The Knicks were playing the NBA Finals against the Rockets, and they cut away from the game show the car chase.
So you must have been immediately intrigued by the car going down the highway with police chasing it.
No, I was immediately frustrated.
I know, I'm kidding.
So many fun memories.
Oh, yeah, of summertime.
Summer, the fireworks.
Fireworks at the beach.
God, I miss the fireworks. But guess what? We also like modern day good vibes, right?
Yeah, oh, I love good vibes at any time of the day or of the season, any seasonal vibe. But
do you know what helps facilitate the good vibes?
I do. Most importantly, you want some Bud Light Seltzer nearby.
Yes, and the type of Bud Light Seltzer you should get for the best vibes is the new limited edition Bud Light Seltzer Retro Summer Pack. So the new tie-dye pack features three throwback flavors that are reminiscent of the summers we're talking about.
I'm not even looking at the flavors, but I would say what would spark some memories for me in terms of flavors would be like, I don't know, summer ice.
That's one of them?
Really?
Yes.
Oh, I'm thinking not raspberry, but like a different color of raspberry.
Close, yes.
One that it doesn't come in naturally. Blue raspberry.
Yeah.
Is that one?
Yep. And to guess the third one.
Okay, well, not just cherry flavor. I would add it with like, not a lemonade, but something in the citrus-aid family. Maybe like a cherry.
You're so close.
Cherry limeade.
Yes.
Is that it?
Yep.
Oh,
that's
my
the
God.
Third one.
Well, if that weren't exciting enough, for the first time ever, fans could also purchase these out-of-sight flavors in a new form.
What kind of flavors?
Out-of-sight with Bud Light Seltzer Retro Summer Icicles.
Ooh. So grab some friends, play some tunes, and enjoy the vibes. So get it delivered right to your door. Find a retailer near you at budlight.com/delivery or pick it up yourself.
Yeah, support local business.
At the local grocery store or convenience store or liquor store.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up and we'll meet again.
What is your most commonly used emoji, would you say?
It's embarrassing, but the shaka emoji.
Oh, yeah. That's in what... Well, surfing. That's your surfer.
Real fucking surf dork. And it's funny. It's like just in the last handful of years, I kind of quit for all my 20s and even half of my 30s. And then I picked it back up. And now it's a huge part of my life. But I almost feel like I'm doing press for it now. Now it's like I've been, you know, just organically talking about it a lot. And then I don't know. I'm getting embarrassed again.
If you could be a professional athlete, would it be a surfer?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not thinking of Joey Kern. I'm thinking of you and Grind. Have you talked to Joey in a while? Have you?
I did a movie that Joey wrote and directed, like probably.
Oh my God, that's right, Big Bear. Yeah, yeah. Oh, you're great in that. I like that movie.
Thanks. Yeah, yeah, he did a really good job.
Yes, Big Bear, which I don't know if you know this, is loosely based on something that I'm kind of responsible for.
So are you? Well, I take it, you know, he's him. He's playing himself. But then, who are you? Are you me? Am I playing you?
No, I'm the one. I don't think I'm represented in it because I'm the one that set him up with.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice. Not really my fault. I wasn't like, I didn't go out of my way to do it.
Hey, but they hit it off for a while.
Oh, like immediately. Yeah. And I was very proud. I was very proud of it. And I remember seeing her at, I mean, it happened like that but I remember seeing her out and I was like, so it's coming up. And she's like, yeah. Cause I got in this email, whatever. If you could have one snack food for the rest of your life, you're stoned, your go-to snack food.
I mean, I love it. It's not, I wouldn't call it a snack food exactly, but I mean, I love a donut. And I'll tell you this. I love the high end, you know, they're doing all the high end ones now and that's great. And it's the same as like burger, you know, fries too. It's like, I love a good high class fry, but it's still hard to beat McDonald's. And for me, as much as I like Sidecar and Blue Star and all the artisanal donuts.
Yeah.
I don't like Dunkin' sucks, but like your local car dealership has like some great ones still. Maybe my favorite.
You're in the land of great strip mall donuts.
The strip mall donut, not the big chain, but your strip mall, average strip mall donut that's not doing anything fancy is as good to me as any of the fancy ones.
What's your favorite movie sequel of all time?
Terminator 2.
Yeah.
Those two are like, what's the opposite of oil and water? Salt and pepper.
Oh, peanut butter and jelly?
Peanut butter and jelly. I mean, it's like, those are so amazing. It's such a great idea and advancement and the flip side of the coin of the first movie. I mean, and they both hold up remarkably well. I think like side Terminator, no, real fast, if I may digress real fast.
Yeah.
I can't figure out the time travel shit and all the, I know that they've been trying to reboot it for a million years and there's a million ways and I don't know how to, I couldn't get into the minutiae of the timelines and the whatever, but one thing I think that they could do is the first two are like Westerns and they're simple and they take place in LA in a day. And then there's like one guy that's a monster and the others are like Star Trek.
That's true. There's this whole universe.
Yes. And we're in the future and we're in the past and there's a million aliens. And it's like, if you could get back to the simplicity of like the real world and one fucking robot walking around,
oh my God.
That holds some appeal to me.
Oh my God. Adam, I feel that way about so many things. I don't know if this means we're getting older or if this is just a truth about entertainment, but I feel that way about comedy. Yeah. I feel that way about when I watch Seinfeld, it's like they just are waiting for a table at a Chinese restaurant or they need to get a rye bread up to. There's something beautiful and so much easier to digest about a story like that. The simplicity of it.
Yeah. Maybe it's the OCD in me, I guess, but I'm obsessed with economy in everything, in storytelling, in movement, in sports, but in screenplays. You know, I love a tight screenplay and I love, you know, and how much can you do with how little and just ratcheting the tension and getting all the fat out. And obviously you can go on tangents, but I do not understand the need now for the tentpole movie. It's a prerequisite. Like it's gotta be 2 hours and 30 minutes. This is what 8-year-olds want. It's gotta be 2 hours and 30 minutes. And if there's an action scene and you've got a few ideas, make it a 20-minute action scene and just, and run out of ideas and just have it devolve into white noise quickly.
I know.
It's so bananas to me. I'm like, what, what happened to the 90? Like, why are these kids' movies? Why are they not an hour and 40 minutes? And I thought it's what, you know, was one of my favorite things. What I think people responded to in Shazam was the simplicity of it. It's not very bloated.
It's funny. I thought you were going to say maybe it's the OC in me. And then you added a letter. What is your go-to karaoke song?
I have a very shitty voice and limited range within that those shit vocals. So I guess it's changing, but I keep it low. Weirdly, though, I guess Harry Nilsson, Everybody's Talking. That's a fun one that I can kind of do that doesn't blow me out.
Yeah. Do you do the wow, wow?
Yeah,
wow,
yeah.
Wow.
That's fun, too.
Hey, that was good. You don't have a shitty voice. Who is your very first celebrity crush?
Well, so I'm sure I can recall many.
If there's a way to narrow it down to 10.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the first. Like
the formative one.
I mean, because I can, it's like, I could think of all, trying to think of, I just want this to be special, Justin.
I know. Well, you want to be respectful
of that. I can rifle off, that's not the term, but you know, I could say Cary Grant in Goonies, or I could say Meredith Salinger in Dream a Little Dream, or Heather Graham in License to Drive, but I'm not going to do that. I want to think of...
Because you want to respect the one.
Stumped, I don't know.
Were you a big Star Wars guy?
Not really. Yeah. Yes, average. And it hasn't stayed with me in a, like, I'm not a big one now.
Can I guess the butt? Can I guess the butt that you were going to say?
Yeah.
But in Return of the Jedi, we were... Four or five.
Yeah.
We saw it in, did you see it in the theaters?
I don't remember.
Well, I remember, I think that was probably the first time I saw somebody like that, wearing somebody like, something like that.
But Carrie Fisher in there. Now here's my butt.
Okay.
Everyone always talks about the gold bikini. No one ever mentions that she's fucking chained up.
Yeah. Right.
Interesting.
I hadn't noticed that, Adam.
You know, I mean, it's like the, you know, I guess it's like the Fay Wray, whoever played in King Kong. You know what I mean? She's also like captive, and there's something. I don't know. Primal about that, I think, too. If she was just walking in a bikini, it might not have had the same effect as her being chained to a big fat blob that needed rescuing.
That's true. And somebody that you knew you were more appealing. I mean, I knew at five that I was more appealing than Jabba the Hutt.
And needed rescue. And needed a hero. Desperately in need of a hero.
Yes.
Although, you know, I think she sort of saved herself by strangling him as well. So she was
she's independent. She was a badass, but
there's something to that.
Yeah. I don't want to dig too deep. But also, I think King Kong's been canceled. If it comes to you, if there's somebody that, cause now I'm thinking it's tough cause there are, during that time, we probably have similar touchstones, and you don't want to say too many cause it's like, oh, Jesus, calm down. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't know if you, did you ever see, this is also Meredith Salinger from Dream a Little Dream, but, A Night in the Life of Jimmy Reardon with River.
Oh my God. River Phoenix. Yes. Oh, wait, don't tell me. Don't tell me it was, you got to tell me. No, it was,
she's the queen in
Samantha
that.
Samantha Mathis?
No, but Pump Up the Volume, Samantha Mathis might as well be the one. We can just say her.
Yeah, okay.
That's a great poll.
No, who, we couldn't watch R-rated movies. My parents were pretty strict about that. So Night in the Life, Jimmy.
I could literally walk down the street at 8 and rent all the R-rated movies I want by myself from the local video store. I don't know why, but Latchkey Kid and Loose Video Store. And Samantha Mathis, Pump Up the Volume.
Who was in Night in the Life of Jimmy Reardon besides her?
Well, it's her, and then I only know because I haven't seen it yet, but it's under a different name now because it's the director's cut, and maybe he wanted a different title. I haven't seen it since I was 10 because I wanted to like be River Phoenix when I was young.
Oh,
and and then lastly, cool. I was in love with every girl in Days and Confused.
Oh,
I was like, oh my god, this high school.
Yeah, Michelle Burke was my favorite.
Which one's she?
Michelle Burke is the one they go in the woods. She goes in the woods with Jason London. But she said, I'll never forget this line where she says, I love the way she said it. She goes, the professor is sexy. Remember they're talking about Gilligan's Island. Michelle Burke, she was in Coneheads.
Yes, funny enough, I kind of, I didn't think so as much on my rewatch or like my, I haven't really rewatched that movie, but like I dipped my toe and was on TV not too long ago. But previous to that, I was sort of under the assumption she looked a lot like Leighton.
Yes.
And then I still see that, but when I saw it again, similar face structures. It's not as, not as much as I thought, but I had it in my head that she was reminding me of her.
Yes. No, who was, oh, the whole cast.
Well, there's fantastic. I don't know. There's like a 10-year-old Mila Jovovich is in it.
Yeah, who's playing that cool song. Also, a girl who could play the guitar and smoke a joint. And,
oh, great.
Yeah, all right. Well, now we're both getting weird. If you had to get a... you have tattoos. Do you have any tattoos?
I don't have any tattoos. Do you have any tattoos?
You don't. I don't.
No.
I hesitated because I had one once and it's since faded. It was like a... I got drunk and somebody did a stick and poke. But if you had to get one, what would you get?
Something of... the family, I guess, you know, it's the only thing I can see like meaning enough, but I've never even like been tempted. I've never gone like, and I feel like the ship has sailed and, you know, while I think they look cool, I think they can look cool. And in general, I think a lot of them look cooler than a few, or I don't know it. Everyone's different. And I do think they look cool, but on me, I've never been tempted. And then it's hard for me to fathom the one I think was cool looking and would continue to think was, you know, neat, but I wouldn't like, it's not a hard rule. I mean, if I was inspired and late in the other day, my daughter drew something, a little heart with like all her family's names in it. And she's like, I wouldn't get another tattoo, but if I did, this would be it. And I'm like, that's a good call. That would be a nice tattoo. That's the only kind of thing I could see. But,
and what is your favorite fruit?
What a good, great question. I love them all, but I guess like a perfect plum, like a plum that's just right, you know, right there, sour and sweet. I've been eating those pluots a lot, I think they're called. They're like the green plums.
Oh, yeah, the green ones?
Yeah, those are great too.
Oh, wow. I haven't had a good plum in a long time. Who would you want to play you in a biopic? In your biopic?
Ooh, I guess you.
Wow. I'm flattered. I would like that. Yeah, I can see. I'm thinking now coming to LA for the first time.
Yeah. I mean, if it depends what, you know, if it's got a span my or starts earlier, I don't know.
I would want you to play me. Yeah.
Yeah. We can work this out.
Okay. We'll trade biopic parts. Wow. Who's your favorite Simpsons character? And if it's Homer, who's your favorite, like, secondary one?
Yeah. I mean, I remember, I guess, not anymore. And while I respect the hell out of The Simpsons, I can't imagine being one of the people who's, like, been watching it for 40 years. But I was certainly
it's been
super,
a while.
It's so weird. But I've been certainly, I was super into it at the time. And my first pair of boxer shorts, this is in, like, the middle of the elementary school, my first pair of boxer shorts ever, this is when you wore, like, just whitey tighties. I didn't know they even went under. And so I wore their Bart Simpson. And I just thought they were shorts and I wore them over my underwear. Too cool.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's funny. Oh, yeah. Anything Bart Simpson
was
cool.
I'm sure he was saying I caramba on it or something.
Don't have a cow, man.
Yeah.
Wait, do you say whitey tighties or tighty whiteys?
Oh, I don't know. I guess. I don't know what I just said. And in general.
Oh, you said whitey tighties.
Whitey tighties, tighty whiteys. I don't know.
Did you switch full? Because I tried boxer shorts. I thought that was like the mature thing to do. I thought that's when you were in high school. That's what I remember my brother was, and I hated him. Did you ever adopt that boxer shorts?
I was, no. Then it was boxer shorts all through my teens and most of my 20s, and then settled on for life. Now, clearly, the answer is boxer briefs.
Boxer briefs. Yeah. Duh. Okay, you can definitely play me then. In the dogs or cats?
I like both, but dogs.
Do you have any? You guys don't have.
We did. All deceased.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But we'll grab another one soon enough.
Beatles or the Rolling Stones?
Beatles.
Yeah.
If I can include everything they did post Beatles.
But I'm totally. I've taken advantage of your time.
I could do this all day, man.
Me too. So fun. But yeah, it would be great to hang out properly one of these days. And
love to.
Thanks, buddy. And so happy for that family. What an adorable
couple of kids. Yeah, we're pretty great. It's pretty great.
It's great.
If you love your kids, happy it can be pretty good.
You're lucky. You're doing it. And best to Leighton.
She says hello as well. Yeah. She's always spoken very, very highly of.
She's the best. She's great. And so was this. I truly appreciate your time, man.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. Same.
California. Oh man.
So
I haven't heard that song in a while.
That just happened.
Yeah, it's a little bit like
it's a little Jonah.
Yeah, it's a little Jonah. Yeah.
Well, Jonah's become a surfer.
He sure has. He's really embraced that culture.
He looks like a really good surfer.
He does.
Yeah. Based on the pictures
Oh man, I would like to go surfing with Jonah.
You have gone surfing, haven't you?
I have, but not with Jonah.
But didn't you kind of take to surfing?
I did. I had a moment. Jonah stuck with it. I did not. It doesn't help living out here. It's hard to surf on the East Coast. That's my excuse.
I remember when you didn't you try it in Hawaii?
Sayulita is the first time I did it in Mexico, and it was what a perfect place to do because the waves were kind of easy. There were smaller waves, and there weren't a lot of people judging me because it's not a big surf culture.
But I do remember. I think you're being a little too humble because a little too modest. Because I remember being very impressed by how quickly you took to it.
Well, you know why?
You were good, right away.
Well, that was about 10 years ago. Would you say we went to that trip?
A little more. A
couple years ago, I guess 2 years ago now, right? Year before the pandemic, I went to Nicaragua. I took my annual trip to Nicaragua, the girls' home. Thegirlshome.com, if you want to check out what we do there. It's a great place.
Shout out,
yes. And I went with my friend Rachel and Drew, also shout out. And we stopped at a great surfing spot in Nicaragua on the coast. I was a little confident about – it wasn't Jessica Rabbit feet level, but I was pretty confident about my surfing skills.
There was some hubris.
Oh, yeah. There sure was. I couldn't get up on the board, and they were watching me. It was extra embarrassing because they took time out of their schedule because they took me to the spot. They're like, well, if you like surfing. So I went out there I'll catch a few waves, half hour. And they were watching me on the beach, and I couldn't get up on the board. It was so embarrassing.
You know, Adam Brody, you guys have shared similar space in the industry.
Because I think so, yeah, for sure.
You're roughly the same age. Mm-hmm. You came up the same time. The more you were talking with mm-hmm. him, the more I realized how many similarities you do have.
Yes.
I never put that together that you, I knew you did this, but the Vince Vaughn thing, his admiration of Vince Vaughn, how much he looks up to him and how much he's sort of modeled his acting career.
Yes.
Like you, I would say.
Yes. For sure.
You both know Leighton Meester. That's another similarity.
Yes.
You both pee in your underwear after you finish going to the bathroom.
I got to say, I've gotten better at that. I don't really do that as much. And I think it's because I'm trying to figure out what I attribute it to. But it's not, for whatever reason, is my diet. I'm sleeping more. Maybe I'm more conscientious.
Maybe your prostate is strengthening somehow. Well, does that happen?
I don't know. I feel prostate confidence ever since I got that check from my doctor, whose name I won't mention. But yeah, I got the old finger check. And I talked about it on the show and not ashamed of it. But, it is a really – you feel better about maybe – so maybe a lot of it was psychosomatic, the dribble. Because I don't get it anymore.
The dribble.
Yeah. Do you never get that? You haven't noticed any difference in your peeing?
Yeah, a little bit.
Like the on-off isn't quite as...
It takes longer to finish.
It does, yep.
But I don't always have a post-pee dribble like you guys do.
Mm.
But maybe I will. You know, I'm approaching 40.
You
guys are a little older than I am.
I wonder if this had any effect on my peeing is because I've been driving a lot. I've been going on these long trips. I drove the van from Arkansas and... You know, it's hard to time, especially when you're drinking coffee, it's hard to time out the peas. And you don't want to stop too often.
You have a very sensitive bladder.
You think. You say that. But I do, I guess.
I do. You do.
It fills up pretty quickly.
Anytime I've been on a road trip with
you, I'm always the first
to go.
You're
always the first one to be like, can we pull over?
That's annoying.
It's okay.
I can pee in the van.
It's like you have a tiny bladder. Or maybe you're just sensitive. You're triggered by caffeine more than other people.
I don't know. You know what math I'm doing in my head? Are people going to care about this at all? Anyone? I mean, some people might.
Yeah, some people will.
Urologists. Or they won't. They won't want to hear about this. If I were a urologist, the last thing I'd want to do is put on a podcast with one of my favorite podcasting teams.
I'll tell you what. No one's going to care that I haven't had this problem yet in my life. There's going to be a handful of people who are interested in what happens to you when you pee.
Yes.
I can't imagine anybody being interested in what happens when I pee.
Have you ever peed your pants?
Yeah.
How long? When was the last time?
The last time I remember it, I was very, I remember because it was very embarrassing. I was at a sleepover party when I was, I think, in fifth grade.
Oh. Oh, sixth mine grade. Is much more embarrassing because really? It was more recent.
I was like two nights ago.
A couple years ago. I was driving back from 4100. Shout out. I don't know if it's still there. I think
it is.
I think. Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Our friend Diana, shout out, was the bartender. And I had a drink, but not I hadn't been drinking alcohol really. But I was like, I just had to pee. And I was going down. The bars had let out. So I was 2 a.m. I'm going down Sunset looking for a place to pee. It was emergency. So I pulled over in West Hollywood. Off of Sunset, and there was one of those little dead end things, and I got out to pee, and a cop, boop boop, he didn't pull me over, but pulled up with his lights on right in front of me, and I was like, do 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 do, walked back in the car, and you know, once psychologically you make the choice to like,
yeah.
Oh, I'm gonna release yeah. it now, it's yeah. ready, it's like
the hatch is open,
there's exactly, there's no turning back, and so I got back,
and you don't want to get a PUI,
no, like. Former friend of the show.
Yeah, you know, we don't
have to say who it is, but it's a really funny memory. A friend of ours got a UIP, urinating in public. And so I got back and I was actually thinking about him. And I got, as I was driving down Sunset, grabbed some bag. I had a bag, fortunately, a garbage bag from the back seat, sat on it. Sat atop it. And just made, it's the weirdest thing to make the choice because it was too late.
You had no bottles or anything?
No. No, I thought about, but bottles too, when you think, because I thought about this on the road trip, a bottle, the mechanics of going in a bottle while you're driving is really dangerous and difficult.
I've peed in a lot of bottles.
While you're driving?
No, but while
exactly.
while the car was driving.
Yeah, that's different. You can move around more. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. when you're driving, you can't get it. To get it in the hole and the whole thing.
You know what I recommend bottle-wise? A large Gatorade bottle because
yes,
it's a wide mouth. Your penis has plenty of room.
Not for everyone's, but yes.
For most penises, I would say.
So your penis had plenty of room.
Not plenty of room. But room to fit in the top of it.
It wasn't snug.
It was not snug.
But it all, okay.
All right. So Adam Brody.
Yeah. Speaking of, can probably fit in.
I bet he's peed his pants at some point.
I wonder. I should have asked him.
I bet they have some cute kids. You saw
oh,
a picture?
Adorable. We got Elaine on the
adorable.
Show. I would love to catch up with
her. She's beautiful, obviously. Mm-hmm. And he is too. He's,
yeah, oh,
he's,
they're such attractive couple.
Yeah. And it's great what? That not only do they have attractive kids, more importantly, it sounds like they have nice kids.
Yeah, exactly.
And
exactly.
You know, there's a lot of not nice kids out there, as you guys talked about.
Yeah, especially attractive kids tend to. Well, right. I don't want to generalize.
You don't know what Shiloh Jolie Pitt is like.
That's true. We
you
should get him on the show.
Gentleman.
We should get Shiloh on the show. You know, I'm now thinking just purely superficially about the two of them. And I am hard-pressed to come up with some kind of combination where the kids wouldn't be attractive. How could those two produce anything but, like, really adorable kids?
That's true.
It's impossible
because
to think about.
Sometimes, you know, sometimes there's a couple where...
I know. Certain
like,
combinations.
Here's an example.
Don't. That might be mean.
No, I won't.
I think
but
I
I'm saying as
say.
A person. No, as a person, I'm oh. saying. Like, Tom Cruise, for example, is obviously extremely handsome.
Uh-huh.
But it's... Everything kind of works together, but not each one of his features is, like, the ideal version of a feature.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
So if that's combined with... A different gene pool, it might not work out.
Great, you're right. You're right.
You know, but like obviously for Tom Cruise, it works.
You're right.
Amazing.
But then when you think about Adam,
but
and
those two are
exactly.
like they all have they like, all their features are kind of
I know.
Great.
Like Adam would, I bet, would be a really pretty woman in drag.
More importantly, nice kids.
Nice. No, I know. We shouldn't dwell on the superficial.
No, it's great that they're nice.
It's the best. It's really admirable. That they are, especially since, you know, they grew up, they're growing up in a privileged home. And I think you got to work a little bit harder to combat that.
Speaking of superficial things, he's totally right about Dazed Confused and the girls in that. I remember seeing that movie for the first time when I was in eighth grade. And
oh,
it was,
man.
You know, eighth grade.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
You don't think about much else during that year.
No, you don't.
And I remember being like, oh my God, this is what it's like.
Yeah, I know.
This is what high school is going to be like.
I know.
It's like, fast forward a year, I'm at an all boys school and it's like nothing close to that experience.
Yeah, there were some Slaters at prep, Slaterson.
Yeah, there were.
There were a couple like, because that was
a
also.
A couple. Yeah.
We went to high school during a time where the 70s, actually, movies like Dazed and Confused were popular and like the 70s in general were being. coming back. You remember that?
And it was, I thought you had a crazy brain fart, and I thought you thought we were, in the 70s.
No. No.
Yeah, it came back a little bit, but our high school had a dress code. And we had, remember the rules? You couldn't have your hair below your shoulders.
Yes, but kids like...
They pushed the envelope.
They pushed the envelope. Yeah. And like, I remember them, especially the rich kids would go out to the parking lot and they had like cool, they could like, they knew exactly how to push the envelope. And they were into like The Dead and like, you know, Fish was really popular.
Fish was, and Dave Matthews Band.
Yeah, maybe future guest. One of the nicest human beings I've ever met.
Really?
Yes, incredibly nice.
I think more people are going to care about that than you peeing in your pants.
You do?
Yeah.
That he's nice?
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, so he was nice.
Yeah, very, very nice.
Did you just like, start to sing his song?
Yeah.
I just looked over at you and you go, crash into me. That was so
I
weird.
I love that song. I went on a
that whole album. Oh, my God. Oh, but that's also, I mean, I'm talking about
school,
heyday.
Yeah, yeah.
That was like, was our.
Are you getting a little turned on thinking about it?
Not turned on, but nostalgic and happy.
Yeah, in that way I meant turned
on. Yeah, not sexually.
Okay. You got your hands down your pants.
It's on my waistband.
Why do you have it in there? Are you cold?
No, but it's comfortable. I like wearing pockets. And
you don't have pockets?
I do, but these pockets aren't great for it's hard to explain.
Okay.
These are like meshy pockets.
I'll say this. Of the Dave Matthews thing, the peeing the pants thing, and this is probably, in terms of people caring.
Yeah, definitely. The least.
The least.
No one cares that I like pockets.
I bet our mother wouldn't even care.
Adam Brody is right about the perfect plum.
Oh, yeah, I know.
It's been a long time since I've had a perfect plum.
Yeah.
But they're really hard to beat.
When you get that snap on the outside.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And they're really juicy and sweet and...
A little... He says it. A little sour.
Yeah.
What's that?
Tart.
Tart
and
yes,
sweet.
Yes. A pluot?
It's a plum and an apricot mixed together, right?
Yeah.
Bread together.
Those are delicious.
Do you want to read a letter?
Sure. Here's Dustin Hoffman singing that song. California, California, here we come. Okay. From Beth B. Beth B. Subject, would you rather? Great. Hi, Christian and Justin. Longtime listener, not first time writing in, so I'll skip how much I love the podcast and get right to the good stuff. Well, what if that's the good stuff?
Yeah, it depends. Depends on the good stuff.
Well, to us. No, that's nice of you to listen and to be writing in. So does that mean she wrote good stuff on earlier letters, I guess, in earlier letters?
I wish I knew what she had
written. I know. Me too. Beth. Well, I'm guessing she likes the show. She's a longtime listener. Okay, back to Beth. I love that someone, Adam Carolla, finally said that Live Free or Die Hard was their favorite movie sequel. I can't believe no one has yet. Oh, this is good stuff. Not just because you are the one asking the question and you're in it, but also because it is one of the best movie sequels of all time. It's one of the few sequels that is as good as, bordering on better than, the original. Wow. You know...
I think it's really good,
too. I think it's good. I don't agree with that. I think the original is just... It's a masterpiece, but it's very nice to hear that because God, we worked hard on that.
I do. I will say that I think
proud of it. I'm proud
of
it.
Your Die Hard movie is the best sequel of Die Hard.
Of the Die Hards, yeah.
Of the people, five. There's five. Yeah. I didn't see the fifth one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, back to Beth. Thank you, Beth. And I'm sure if Len Wiseman's listening, the director of the movie, he would thank you too. Friend of mine. The only other one that comes to mind that's better than the original is Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Hmm.
Yeah, I haven't seen that in a long time.
I haven't either.
We saw the third one not too long ago, and
it's not as good as the originals.
Okay. I also hesitated to say the third one's not. I didn't like it nearly as much as the first one. But my first movie director, Dean Pariseau, directed it. So and Dean is an incredible director, one of the best. Okay, who cares? Also, back to Beth. Also, I finally have a good would you rather. All right, would you rather have none of your clothes after? This is so weird.
What?
Listen to this. This is so weird. Would you rather have none of your clothes have any pockets?
Oh, weird.
Isn't that weird? Not even your jackets. Or have one large pocket, but it is front and center on all your pants, opens at the top, is so large you have to fumble around in it to find things. It's like a fanny pack,
like a
built-in fanny
pack. Like a kangaroo patch?
Yeah, yeah, like a pouch.
Pouch?
And when you do find things, that it definitely looks like you are pleasuring yourself and no pockets on any of your other clothes.
Well, I think you know my answer.
Yeah, so I would rather have that one big pocket.
Well, but the one obvious caveat is that
you have to keep, you don't,
if you can't make it look like you're not pleasuring yourself.
No. I think that's just, she's saying that's a potential byproduct.
Okay. But if she's saying That every time, that's part of the deal, that's part of the hypothetical, but it definitely looks like you're pleasuring yourself.
I don't think so.
I'd have to reconsider my answer.
She just says it's so large, you have to fumble around in it to find things. And when you do that, it definitely looks like you are pleasuring yourself.
Okay, well, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Because if every time you go into your pocket in public, legitimately looks like you're pleasuring yourself.
I just turn away from people.
Okay.
You know, and just don't do it on like playgrounds.
Or just get better at making it not look like that, I guess.
Yeah. That's a tricky one because it's like you can also keep fewer things in the pocket.
I would definitely pick the big pocket.
I know, but now that I'm thinking about it, I guess why not? In fact, I don't mind a fanny pack.
You get both hands in there.
Oh, yeah. Rest them.
Sounds comfortable.
It does. I like that, being able to do that. I like, you know, the way cowboys do it. Like they kind of like rest their hands in
their thumbs. They look them in.
I like doing that. Sometimes I'll do it. I'll get so lazy that I'll do it like this with my collar on my shirt. I'll hold onto my collar like this if I don't have pockets.
Does that mean we're insecure that we need to do stuff with our hands?
Oh, maybe. Can't you just let
them
dangle?
Remember being in plays in high school?
Yes. And you're so aware of your hands. Yeah.
Knowing what to do with your hands.
That's often a tell of an actor, of an insecure actor, self-conscious actor. You see that they're like struggling with their hands. That's often where it, you know, manifests. But
so
yeah.
So you'd pick the pocket.
I think I'd pick the pocket. Yeah. Although now that I think about it, it'd be a good exercise to not, but I like keeping things. What am I going to do with my money? And
here's the problem. If I don't have pockets, one big pocket or normal pockets, mm-hmm. I might end up resting my hands on the waistband of my pants a lot, and then that could be problematic.
As I've just noticed, it looks like you got your hands down your pants.
Right.
Yeah. But if they're not moving, it's not going to look like you're pleasuring yourself. Who cares if your hand's just down your pant a little?
I think people would care.
Well, they care, but it's not obvious. It doesn't look like you're doing anything.
No, I know, but it's still like not a clean-looking thing.
Occasionally,
you know?
I have to adjust, you know, and I'll you know, you got to check to make sure no one's around, but I'll have to do it.
Well, when I do adjust, and I'm in public and I have to adjust, uh-huh. I often try to do it through my pocket.
Yes.
You know
too.
What I mean?
Yeah, but that can look weird.
I've gotten pretty good at it.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you, Beth. It's a good Would You Rather.
It is good.
And thanks for that.
And very appropriate considering we were just talking
about it. How weird.
And if you guys would like to write in, our email address is lifeisshort@wondery.com.
And thank you to our very charming guest, Adam Brody, and all of the listeners.
And go check out his movie.
Oh, yes.
Which got excellent reviews.
The Kid Detective. Where is it? It's on Netflix.
It's streaming.
Streaming.
Somewhere.
You'll find it.
And if you haven't seen Promising Young Woman.
Oh, man.
We both highly recommend
it. It's
phenomenal. So take that for what it's worth.
Yeah. We also recommend that you listen to the voice memo at the end of this, if you want.
And we also recommend you tuning in next week.
Thanks to everyone who makes the show possible, and we're going to name them right now.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
Follow Life is Short on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, the Wondery app, or wherever you're listening right now. Listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus. If you like our show, please give us a 5-star rating and a review. And be sure to tell your friends. Another way you can support the show is by filling out a small survey at wondery.com/survey.
Life is Short is hosted by me, Justin Long. It is co-hosted and produced by you,
Christian Long.
It's also produced by Megan
V.
Monaco. Senior producer, Michelle
Mish
Lands. Audio engineer,
Sergio Enriquez.
And there's an executive producer whose parents one day, long time ago, named him
Marshall Louis
for a company called
Wondery.
Bye, everyone.
The following is not a paid ad for Honey Mamas. It's just a company we love and a voice memo we thought was funny.
What's that one?
Cardamom ginger.
Really?
Interesting. It's really cardamom-y.
What? Can I try it?
Stop saying it.
Okay.
I'm going to pass you a log while I'm like in the middle of my first fight.
No, just pass the whole thing. Really? You like it better than coconut?
Not necessarily, but it's very interesting.
Whoa.
It's like there's like a bouquet of chocolate flowers in my mouth. You know, isn't it very floral?
Yes.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
I love a good parasocial relationship with a celebrity who will probably never know my name.
I mean, honestly, who knows? Don't count yourself out. But my favorite part about these feuds is how they're ignited by the tiniest things.
Jada, I love you. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it.
I accidentally laminated my brows too much.
It starts small and then it gets so big.
Be honest, Naomi, I'm fearful of you to this day.
I don't know her.
We all just have to admit, we're addicted. Everybody has opinions. Everyone picks sides.
Leave Britney Spears alone right now.
From Wondery, I'm Sydney Battle.
And I'm Matt Bellassai.
And this is Dis and Tell, la, 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 where we unpack why we get so invested in these feuds and whether or not our attention only makes the whole thing worse.
Follow Dis and Tell wherever you get your podcasts.